Hello everyone, it's Yvonne Silva. Just wanted to share with you, as part of the upcoming book launch, a video recording of a recent interview with my colleague and friend Tasha Giroux, Regional VP with the Royal Bank, and share a little bit about her insights and some of my questions around words that pertain to increasing or shifting our confidence. Our confidence being confidence for women. Hope you enjoy the recording.
Good afternoon, Tasha.
Good afternoon, Yvonne.
How are you today?
I am doing good. I'm glad we're finally connected. How are you?
Well, I'm sitting in my office and I'm looking out over the lake, and it's I must admit, it's getting pretty hot in here today. It's about 30 degrees out there, so I will try not to melt. I have my fan going. Is that noise coming through your end, or is it still?
No, not at all. No, it's perfect from my end, Yvonne, and I am envious. I'm sitting in my office that is not close to any windows, and I've been sitting here since far too early this morning to tell you what time. So I have no idea what the weather is like outside, unfortunately.
Well,
I heard it was supposed to be 29 here.
Well, I'm in Calgary, and where are you today?
I am in Edmonton today.
Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your busy day to share some insights with me. I'm hoping that this conversation does record well, and that you're open to this being part of the ramp up to the launch of my book. So, with your permission,
I am more than thrilled to provide any support I can to you on with your book. Absolutely,
excellent. So just for anyone listening who doesn't know either you or I, just to sort of set the context, the reason that I reached out to you, Tasha, is because I've had such a lovely relationship with you so far already through our connection originally started through BPW and your extremely valuable contribution in our mentorship program, the Wisdom Group program. And I've learned a lot in our lunch conversations as well. And I know that you do a lot of work specifically to support the development of women in business, a lot of focus around diversity initiatives. So just to sort of give the formal intro, you're currently the Regional Vice President for Commercial and Financial Services for Edmonton and Alberta North. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So as part of that role, I imagine that you also are leading quite a large team of professionals in the roles of providing different financial services for commercial clients. And do you have a large percentage of women on your team, Tasha?
Currently, I would say my team would be comprised probably 40% women, 60% men, and we are doing a lot of specific work to remedy that, if I can use the word remedy, and in particular at the leadership level where my representation is even lower. I'm about 30% women, 70%
men. Right. And certainly, if I look at other large corporations, I mean, certainly RBC is well known in Canada for its contribution on a variety of different community endeavors and lovely supportive activities for women's initiatives. It's not uncommon to see those kind of statistics, and that's one of the reasons that I decided I would extend my coaching work and write a book.
That's great.
I am all about teaching women to flourish in business, and part of that is connected with having increasing their confidence so that they can take on a much bigger role or expand in business as entrepreneurs. I love working with women that have a massive vision and helping them to make a really big ripple effect. And even though you're not an entrepreneur, I've seen you doing a lot of very creative things within RBC. And so I kind of think of you as an entrepreneur. I mean, you've got an MBA, you've got a certificate in HR management. You've been a personal financial planner with that designation. You know, you've got some excellent credentials on top of 25 years at RBC.
That is correct. 25 years this upcoming month.
Wow. Well, yeah. I really appreciate the opportunity to connect and get your insights. So the whole purpose behind the book, I've spent particularly the last 7 years after getting my executive coach certification, combined with my 20 years in human resources in leadership roles, I spend a lot of time in conversation with a lot of women who are wanting some language to help them through a particular situation. And I found that I've been sharing a lot of the same tips and techniques and strategies and words and how to use them over and over so many times that it was time to get this out to a bigger audience because they're seeing success, but I'd like to have a larger ripple effect. So the working title for the book right now, it is going to change, but the working title is Word Confidence for Women. So that's what I'm working on, and I really wanted to gather your insights, Tasha, around words that trigger the you or that you've seen or perhaps had recent conversations with your staff, where there's something being said or a particular word that triggered, particularly in an emotional response. Because as women in the workplace, I think we get very often judged when we do react emotionally to something that's said. And if we could dive into that a little bit, I would love your insights on words that trigger an emotional response. And it's okay, it may be personal, it may be a story or an insight from a colleague or a coworker or a peer or a subordinate.
Okay, and you may have to guide me a bit on this one, Yvonne. I saw just the note that you had put in, and I was trying to think about in the context of work. We're doing lots of work with, and I've shared that work with you on unconscious bias. And it tends to not necessarily be work, but it can be the biases that come out through day to day situations at work, whether it be staffing, whether it be different work assignments. So I'm incredibly mindful of that. But when I tried to actually think in the context of words, I struggled a little bit with how I would frame that. So you're meaning mm-hmm. in the context of a conversation?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a couple of examples of words that are going to be explored in the book. One of them is but. So, you know, we're listening to a conversation. It may be in a meeting. It may be in a performance review. And somebody, the leader of the conversation says, you know, you've done some really great work throughout the year, but I'm wanting to talk to you about a specific situation where there's a chance for improvement. So in that instance, just that three-letter word, but, in the middle of the sentence, takes it from being a positive comment to very often what we focus on only hearing the last part of the sentence, which is about a performance improvement opportunity. And here comes the criticism.
Okay.
That would be one example. Another example is the use of the word why. And I think I've even shared this in some of my mentorship workshops, where I am now very conscious, and particularly as a coach, I obviously ask a lot of questions. I'm very conscious about when I use the word why, though, because what I've seen is when I ask, you know, why are you doing this, or why is this, you know, being done this way, what happens is most often the person I'm asking gets their back out. And it's not because of how I've asked it so much as because they feel defensive when the word why comes into the conversation or starts the conversation, like they have to explain themselves or something. And again, it sets up this energy of pushback and resistance and defensiveness. So those would be a couple of examples of words that have triggered perhaps the desired response, or maybe not even the desired response, and perhaps we're even unaware that that's how it's being received by someone.
Okay, and so it's not necessarily in the context of a male-female working relationship, it's more around the triggers that could cause a level of defensiveness or or turn the direction of the conversation a way you're not looking?
Well, I think that's a great observation, because what I found in working with women is that we tend to be engaged more in conversation. We want to be more collaborative. We want to be more caring. We want to elicit in ideas and insights. So we tend to ask more of those curiosity questions anyway, and think about how something's going to land with somebody. Is it going to be received well? Are we being sensitive to their needs? Whereas, not painting all men and male leaders with the same brush, but they don't very often have the same desire to take the time to think through how something's going to land, particularly with women.
Yeah, it's interesting to say that. I would say, well, I have not personally experienced that but or why sort of scenario necessarily. I maybe have, but subconsciously the way I have managed through is always looking to ask open-ended questions. And I would say part of what we've done, and I don't know if this helps, Yvonne, but even at RBC, that whole piece around giving of feedback, we've developed a very prescriptive model by which we provide feedback to help people improve performance, men or women, that is very, it takes out all the personal part of it, and it's very focused on a collaborative approach to tell me what you think went well, what would be your view of what could be improved, can I share what I saw from what went well, so you start with what the positives, and then look for the opportunities, then you seek to come to an agreement and then move forward with an action plan. So I don't necessarily, in the context of that, let me share some stuff, I really like that, but you would probably still see that, but we've really tried to frame out the way, the environment in which we give feedback, so that it's taken with the spirit in which it's coming. Mm-hmm. It's funny though, Yvonne, because here's what I can tell you. I learned early on to try and avoid using sports analogies in the workplace, because I did get feedback, and I tend to be, like, I'm a sports fanatic, right? So for me, I could never relate to the many women that took exception to, knock it out of the park, make sure you got your ball lined up in the context of work, but I couldn't believe how many women took exception to that. Yet our whole sports analogy, the whole model by which we do coaching, is based on a sports analogy.
That's really interesting. And I'm so pleased to hear that the use of appreciative inquiry is being used more in the performance review context. What went really well? How could it be even better? And then that asking, the permission. Can I share what my observations have been? And again, that's another piece of what's going to be in the book, is putting kind of like a precursor before the question. So very often I will ask people when I'm in, particularly in coaching situations, but it's extended out into many other conversations. When I want to know something, instead of just diving in and saying, tell me about, I will say first, I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about blah, blah, blah. So it just softens the whole inquisition concept.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think even in the framework of what we call observational coaching, we're very deliberate on the, and I would say the setup or the pre-coaching, that we agree to what's being observed, like what are we trying to develop and improve upon, so that it doesn't just become a bucket list of 18 things that maybe aren't the most critical things to help that employee really achieve their full potential. So we agree that it might be, for example, I am trying to get better at reward and recognition. So I'd like you to sit in on one of my meetings with my team, and I would really like you, I'm going to put a lot of focus on recognizing the right activities, and I'd like you to sit in and be able to provide me some feedback, Mr. or Mrs. Coach, on how I did. so that you're coming into the meeting and you may observe 18 different things that you would do differently or as a coach you want to provide feedback on. But the crux of what you're actually coming in to support me on in the context of that meeting is how I'm doing with reward and recognition.
Right.
As a coach, I went through when we were first launching this and I got my coaching excellence and I quickly learned that there's always going to be sidebar things.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Yvonne, like you said, I will always focus on what the purpose of my observational coaching, and then I will ask permission to share a few sidebar things that I think might help them as well. And I write them on the bottom of my sheet, right? So again, I think it is the way we frame out the conversations we're going to have. And for me, the core of, I think, what's helped me be successful in probably 15 different leadership roles is authenticity and truly being genuine in the team, really understanding that the spirit of the feedback you're providing is to help them be better. There's no malicious intent or there's no benefit in me. In fact, I often say to people, it'd be sometimes just easier for me to be quiet because this is a hard conversation for me to have, but that's not what coaches do, right? I owe it to you to provide this feedback, assuming you want to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the other thing that I would say is a little bit of a trigger for me, and I think it's because I'm just so mindful of the impact that words can have, is I do pick up often now on how regularly in our conversations we use you guys.
Yes.
Right? And now I've actually asked people, and it doesn't necessarily cause a trigger reaction, but I'm not a guy. And I find I do that with my team as well. So I've asked them to help me get better at bringing that unconscious to the conscious by I say calling me out on it, but helping me acknowledge when I'm using words that are not, you know, not supportive of the culture I'm trying to create within my team.
Right. So when you think about what it is that helps women to be more confident, and when it comes down to language or specific words, are there a few words that you've seen because you've used them in your conversations to encourage and empower your female team members that have worked especially well, or anything that you've seen other male leaders saying or using words, specific words that will help or contribute rather to women losing their confidence? Because that's really the essence of the book, is about confidence and how language can play such an important part in building our confidence and being showing up more confidently as women when we know how to use it effectively.
Yeah, so there's lots to that question, because I think a lot of confidence is internal, it's intrinsic, right? It's the whole self-doubt and countering that, and then, you know, always making sure you're prepared as possible. In the context of work, I would say in my moments of true confidence is where I hear the great job, the thank you, that was exactly what we needed, the acknowledgement and the recognition that what I did added value or hit the mark, right? And I would say that even from a leadership. So where I start to lack confidence is, oftentimes it's not even the words we want, it's the body language for me.
Yep.
I tend to be very, well, you and I have had many conversations, right? I like to look people in the eyes. I like to see, okay, is it resonating? Is it hitting? But clearly, if it comes down to words, it would be things that would demonstrate a lack of confidence, right? I don't know if we've hit the mark with that. Why did you do that? Questioning decisions that I've made. Anything that kind of would suggest that, you know, I'm not on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm trying to think of specific words, I would say in a work context, at least in my work context, I have never seen it actually come down to one word. It's the scenario that surrounds the situation, right? And that's just personal. I mean, I've never had anyone say, "You failed, poor job." However, I know that I've had failures, and it has been brought to my attention in different ways. And I think that that's the way you kind of learn and grow from it. But those are the things that certainly cause you to question your own confidence.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you're talking, I'm finding this so interesting, and I've actually written down a few words on the positive side, acknowledgement. And I think that, you know, we certainly don't do enough of that for each other. It's definitely a big contributor when we do get, especially the unexpected thank you. You know, the little note. I think you were telling me you were going to send me that book on bias that you kindly provided.
But did I not send it to you yet? I haven't.
Oh, no, you did. No, what I was going to say was, because it was a busy week and I'd forgotten about it, when it arrived in the mail with your handwritten note on it, it was like,
oh, wow, surprise. Oh, I'm so glad. And you know, Yvonne, as you're talking about that acknowledgement, I would also say, and again, I know that this isn't a pitch for RBC, but there's actually, it was recently shared with the leadership, just the correlation to stronger performance and stronger engagement with more recognition that's customized to your employees. So we actually have a formal Royal Performance Recognition where you can nominate people, but we've also implemented what's called Instant Thanks. And it's a way, you know, where you're not going to write a big formal recognition, but to instantly thank someone. And it's amazing how powerful that is. You know, I got an instant thanks from an SVP last week, which I've never got before, right? And you kind of go, wow, like, okay, someone at the very top of the organization is acknowledging something that I think is part of my normal day to day. And I don't need a whole ton of affirmation, or at least I didn't think I did. But boy, that put wind in my sails for the whole day. Right? Like, it is amazing. You always say, oh, I don't need the pats on the back. Well, when you're not getting them and then you get them, boy, it's powerful.
It is. And I think I was actually writing a workbook recently for a mentorship program. And the topic was courage. I was thinking about, you know, what is it that is, you know, courageous, and, you know, settled on, you know, one very easy to understand example where we don't think we're capable of something. Then when we actually surpass that and are able to do it, you know, we feel more brave about that because we thought we would never be able to achieve it, than something that is an actual easy win. I remember when I was in one of Harvecker's courses, I think it was Warrior Camp, and we had to climb Mount Yenmister in the Kananaskis area. And it was divided up into five segments. And I got to the milestone mark number one, and my legs were aching. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't get up at 4 or 5 in the morning like you do for fitness, but my legs were almost numb at number one, and I thought, there's no way I'm going to get to number five. But we also had someone on crutches who was on our team, and it was a team activity that we also had to get to the top of the mountain. And by the time we actually reached it, I mean, I couldn't feel my legs after milestone one, but I just kept, you know, one step in front of the other, and we helped him get to the top. What a fabulous view, laying on our bellies on the plateau on the top, overlooking this massive drop-off. And one sense of accomplishment, I never thought I could actually do it. And yeah. It really opened my eyes to, well, what else have I not thought that I could actually take on and haven't even tried?
Yeah. You know what, Yvonne, it's interesting. I was having a neat conversation with my boss a couple of weeks ago, and he referenced the Navy SEALs, and I don't know if it was a book or an article he read. And when you think that you are physically done as a human being, you have truly only given 40% of what you're capable of. Right? And the Navy SEALs are going into the highest risk, most fueled, intense situations, right? So right. That work that came out of research there, I thought that was really powerful. And I'd say the other thing for me that ties into this whole conversation is I have never personally, and I think I shared with you, Yvonne, I've never had to self-talk. In fact, when I used to hear people saying, yeah, you know what, you kind of work yourself through it, I used to think, well, that's just crazy, just go do it. My transition into my new role in a new line of business that is a very non-traditional female role in this organization, I self-talked every night for 6 months to get myself so that I could actually sleep. And I say, you know, rise to what I knew I needed to do. And it was all about it was completely my own confidence. And in fact, I would say for the first month and a half, 2 months, I could get myself through with 4 words. I would wake up in the sweat in the middle of the night, and I said, I know I can, to myself. And I could roll over and go back to sleep. And then I found that wasn't enough, and I had to add 4 more words. And it was, and I want to. Mm. So I got myself to a certain point on that, you know, when you talked about that climb, and yeah. Then it wasn't enough. So I had to figure out, okay, so you know you can do it, Tasha, but is your heart and head in it to actually get you to the top?
Mm-hmm. Well, so. I'm going to think on that a little bit, because I know, I mean, maybe it is just, you know, exactly that, self-talk. Maybe there's some, you know, another word around it. But certainly in my case, it was, I think I can get to milestone number 2. I'm just going to go for number 2. And so I kept my big hairy goal in, you know, bite-sized chunks and just kept plodding away at it.
Yeah.
But I think a couple of other words I circled was confidence.
Yeah.
As a big one when you're talking about, you know, being complimented, certainly for something well done, but also when you're being questioned with that, you know, why did you do it that way, is that sense of confidence that we know that we did our very best and that we can speak to that and we can speak to why we did it without hanging our head, that we can, you know, stand up strongly, confidently, that we did the best and made the best decision with the information we had at that time. And that has to be enough. The other thing is failures, and I always call them lessons. I believe that there are no failures in life. There are just opportunities for learning. And we all have to have those in order for us to grow. It's like, I can't remember the quote. I think it's somebody, Anais, A-N-A-I-S, when they talk about the seed pod that has to break open and completely crack in order for something new, a new shoot of growth to come up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do. I completely agree with that. And I think it speaks to even what I've tried to instill in my kids is to me, it's always about being as prepared as you possibly can. And then you just go for it. You put your hand up, you make yourself available. That's what creates door opening opportunities. And I use the word just funny about every time my kids are going into a big exam and, you know, they're stressing and they've studied for a week. I always say, have you done enough studying that you feel confident that you can go into that exam? And it's the minute that they tell me yes, I say, then no regrets. It will be what it will be. If you can't have prepared anymore, then you know what? You're going in as confident as you can possibly be. And whether you do amazingly well or whether you don't do as well as you thought, you couldn't have prepared anymore. And that's a lesson that I learned through work, right? You can only do what you can do. And then, like you said, you put it out there and you say, I gave it my best, and you don't have regrets for it.
Mm-hmm. I think the word I'm circling again, I mean, having interviewed 6,000 people in my career for different positions, and that's before I started coaching and asking the question, I couldn't help take notes on my end, because it reminds me of elements of the conversation. But what I'm writing down right now and circling in big circle is the whole topic about enough. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely a word that is in the book and will be explored. And I would love to be able to reference some of this conversation, you know, maybe do a quote or two, maybe include a story or two with your permission from what we've talked about today. I know that you have another meeting coming up. So is there anything else that you wanted to share before I let you go?
Yeah, I would just say, Yvonne, you are welcome to use anything based on the conversations that you and I had. I am happy to support and help. I think the work you're doing is super important. And I would say the only other thing that I might add, just from my own experience, when I talk about this kind of self-talk and I know I can approach I had to take, what worked for me was, you know, you take these new exciting challenges in your organizations or in your business that you know are risky, you oftentimes have to just keep leaning in on the things you know you're really good at to keep your confidence level high. So when you're feeling vulnerable about the other skills that you're trying to develop, it's really important that you're able to pull back and say, but wait, yes, there's some opportunity for me there, but wow, look at how many things I'm super good at that I'm gonna bring into this situation or into this business. And I did find, you know, I found that super helpful. I've also found that taking those risks can create some of the very best opportunities. You know, that stepping outside your comfort zone beyond what you thought were your pre-established limits and challenging yourself, it not only opens so many more doors, but boy, it makes life fun, right? It does. Because you're able to continuously learn and grow and develop, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a huge learning growth buff. I mean, I live it, breathe it, teach it. You know, I always have a book on the go or a course on the go. And certainly, I did an exercise myself just this week for another program that I'm in, and we were talking about. This is actually with Teresa de Grobar, who's the author of Mass Influence.
Okay.
And it was an activity to write down 500 accomplishments that you've already accomplished in your life. And I don't quite have 500 yet, but I'm well on my way to 200. So I just have about time to do it.
You know what? I think that's a really neat exercise. If I could just add like one more thing that I think is really important and that's helped me, Yvonne, is I think as employees, male or female, you have to take control of your own career and you need to be really deliberate and strategic and thoughtful around your own development plan. I share this with people on my team all the time. Since the day I started, and I have no idea why I did this, but I have always had my own development plan. And in our organization, we do quarterly reviews. Every quarter, my development plan goes into my manager and it's my time to refresh. And I add personal goals on there as well as work goals. And I know oftentimes my managers, in fact, probably more times than not, it didn't get looked at, but it didn't matter to me because I never built those development plans for other people. I built them for me and it was holding me accountable to things that I thought were important for my own personal and professional growth. So, the final thing that I think from a woman perspective, and I share this often too, is you never get what you don't ask for. So,
exactly.
Right? So the worst thing that can happen is someone says no to you. And that's not that painful once you get used to it. But people will also never understand your intentions if you're not asking. So I always say, don't be afraid to ask. And don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want. Worst thing absolutely that can happen is someone says no.
Absolutely. And ask is one of the words in the book too.
Perfect. There you go. So I landed on a word.
Thank you for confirming that. Absolutely.
If you're going along, anything I can do to help, or if you want anything that kind of triggers from stories I've shared with you, I am more than happy to do what I can.
That's really appreciated, and I definitely will be incorporating some of these valuable insights, and thank you so much for sharing your time today, and I look forward to tapping into the recording as well.
Perfect. I will get Sarah to send you the recording right away.
Super.
Okay, thanks, Yvonne. Take care.
Have a great holiday and a great rest of the afternoon.
You bet. I'll talk to you when I get back.
Okay, bye,
Catherine. Okay, bye-bye.